Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges. On Friday, October 16th, the Norris Group proudly presents its 8th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, Wilson Investment Properties, and White House Catering. For tickets and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is M. Lance Coyle. Mr. Coyle is the 2015 president of the Appraisal Institute. He will serve as immediate past president in 2016. He serves this year as chair of the organization's executive committee and chairs its policy-setting board of directors. Mr. Coyle has been involved in the real estate appraisal industry for 30 years. He's a principal of Coyle Realty Advisors, a Dallas-based real estate services firm engaged in fee-based investment property valuation, analysis, research, and expert with witness testimony and counseling. Mr. Coyle, we welcome you to our show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Let's talk first about the Appraisal Institute, its scope and how many members it has. It's national in scope, correct?
Actually, national and international.
That's right.
We have about 21,000 professionals in 60 countries around the world. We think we're the largest valuation association in the world that's dedicated to just real estate valuation.
Do valuation practices then remain consistent, even though they're in other countries?
No.
Okay.
They're consistent here in the U.S., but around the world, valuation practices do differ depending upon in-country laws and customs.
Interesting. So you might have an entirely different market value take if you're in a different country.
Depending on the country and the laws specific to that country, there may be different ways of getting to a valuation conclusion.
Okay. How does the Appraisal Institute go to bat for the appraisal institute, the industry?
Well, we have a long, long history of devotion to what we call the public trust. We believe that the public should be able to trust in the services provided by valuation specialists. And to do that, what we've done through the years is devote ourselves to expanding and improving upon the body of knowledge. We've educated literally thousands of folks with what we think are some of the finest real estate valuation education courses out there. And we remain the largest publisher of real estate valuation textbooks in the world. We have about 70 titles right now. So we're making significant contributions to making appraisers better and how they perform their jobs. And then finally, we maintain a full-time legislative office in Washington, D.C., where we advocate and communicate on a daily basis for not only our members, but all of the appraisers in the United States.
There was a time when the license wasn't even required to be an appraisal. It seems like a long time ago, but there was a time.
Well, it is a long time ago, although I have to say I do remember it.
I do too.
I lived through it. Prior to the enactment of FIREA law in 1989, there was no licensing or certification in place.
I remember taking those classes, actually, and and part of it, my interest was, is I would be meeting appraisers at a property. I'm an investor, and I really wanted to understand their evaluation process, because my challenge was I would be buying a property that was vacant and dilapidated for $40,000 with the expectation to sell it for $120,000 after completely redoing it. And I had to meet him saying, okay, you just bought this for $40,000 and you're selling it for $120,000 and yet you have a willing buyer. So that, as you know, can pose some problems, especially today.
Sure.
But both could be very legitimate numbers. The appraisal industry itself, you know, you've got broker price opinions, automated evaluation models, somebody can go on Zillow. All these seem to indicate the future really doesn't need an appraisal process as we know it now. Why is that thinking flawed?
Well, you're correct, first of all. You're correct that there are alternative valuation products, and they include broker price opinions and automated valuation models, evaluations, lots of different things. Some of those are valuable tools. What they make basically do is they take advantage of some of the newest techniques that are available to all kinds of valuation professionals today. Techniques like linear regression, big data analysis, and those kinds of things. And to that extent, those are useful techniques, and the Appraisal Institute embraces them. On the other hand, automated valuation models have proven to be very, very difficult to make particularly accurate. I think everybody knows that a Zillow estimate or another estimate based on a computerized program doesn't necessarily know that you put that beautiful patio in last year or that you have finished out your basement. They don't necessarily know those things, and they don't necessarily have access to the very best data, nor do they have access to necessarily the best data in all particular markets. So there is a perceived accuracy problem, and that's why a human appraiser remains the gold standard for an accurate valuation.
You just had your annual get-together. If I had been I'd been on a 10-year vacation. I left in 2005 and I was an appraiser. I came back and I attended your conference. Would there have been kind of an amazing transformation in what the industry has turned into and what is expected of me as an appraiser?
The answer is yes, and I will answer it in two ways. First of all, the body of knowledge has really changed. The techniques and the methodologies that are used today are much more sophisticated than they were 10 years ago. Significant strides have been made in, again, the use of big data, data science and technology, and in the area of market analysis, where there's a significant emphasis today on analyzing supply and demand, analyzing where we are in the market cycle. There have been a lot of changes in the last 10 years. The other big change that I think would really, if you were in that position, would really catch your attention is the depth and the amount of regulation that has cropped up in the last 10 years. Appraisers today are really, really heavily regulated, from the states to the feds, GSEs, and so on. The amount of regulation and the impact of those regulations has been significant on the industry.
Do you have appraisers that just look at the cumbersome situation that it's become and just said, you know what, I'm going to do something else? Is it affecting membership, and is it affecting what they're able to make being an appraiser?
Yes. Since 2007, and the Appraisal Institute does track the population of appraisers in the United States. Since 2007, 20,000 appraisers have left the business, and that's equivalent to a 20% decline. It's pretty significant. There are a variety of reasons for that decline, but one of the biggest reasons, we think, is this overburdensome regulatory environment out there. It's just becoming too difficult, too complicated to comply, and a lot of folks don't think it's worth it anymore.
Let's talk about appraisal management companies and the you know, the space that they have, first of all, you know, they're here to stay probably, but how does that affect the assignment process, first of all? I guess the goal would be that if you're going to go through this this extra layer, that the appraisal would be assigned to the best appraiser possible for that product. Is that been the end result?
Well, that's how we would like it to work. We don't have any institutional or fundamental quarrel with the concept of an appraisal management company. The original idea was to reduce the amount of pressure that appraisers were getting to make certain values from credit officers and others in the lending environment where they had a financial stake in the outcome of a transaction.
And that was very valid. That's constantly pressure from agents, owners, lenders, got to come in at a number.
Yes. And look, who could blame them? I mean, they have a financial stake, so it's not a great surprise to anybody that they would want the appraiser to see things their way and help them make the deal and earn the commission. So that's just natural human behavior, but it doesn't serve the public trust very well. So the idea behind an AMC was that you would insulate the appraiser from those folks. The unintended consequence is that there's great AMCs out there who are very professional and they do it the right way, but there's also AMCs out there that are, again, motivated by financial considerations, and they don't necessarily do things the right way.
We obviously need another set of people to manage the appraisal, the management team, so we need another layer yet.
Well, there you go. I mean, more and more regulation, more and more rules. The states have, in the last few years, enacted regulation of AMCs now. So
yeah, well, more. Well, you know, there, I guess the assumption is that this is going to be done dishonestly without all of this. And that's frustrating to me. It really is. We have an appraiser. I have a hard money loan business where we loan to investors. They buy fixer-uppers and fix them up. We have an appraiser that we want to do the appraisal, not because he's going to come into the number we want. As a matter of fact, he's made a statement of all the people he's ever dealt with. We're the only one that's never tried to sway an appraisal, and he's done several thousand of them for us. The reason I assign the appraisal job to him is he's the best person for the job because he himself has repaired 500 homes as an investor. When he goes to see if it does a field appraisal, he's doing all of us a favor because he has all that knowledge to put into the next appraisal. And you can't just select somebody out of a box and say, here, go take his place. It doesn't happen.
Well, we're frustrated, just like you are, by the way things are today. I remember, you know, I hate to talk about the good old days.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time when a lot of the lenders were small, medium, local type lenders, and the appraiser and the loan officer knew each other and they trusted each other. And that was actually a system that worked really, really well. We've lost that.
Right. And the assumption is that those two guys would be, or women would be, somehow colluding and being dishonest, where it's really just the opposite. They were chosen because there wasn't any of that.
That's correct, but it's also true that back in those days, the lender would often hold the loan instead of selling it.
Exactly.
And that makes a difference. When they sell that loan, they're much less worried about the long-term viability of the borrower and the credit quality, because it's going to be somebody else's problem.
What's interesting, I think, is you've hit on something I hadn't really thought of. The process now may make the loan more palatable to be bought by a third party. Doesn't mean it's more accurate at all.
That's exactly correct. And most of the loans that are made today, at least on residential mortgages, are in fact sold.
Exactly. But it's, since it's a process that somehow they believe in, I've sat next to people bidding at an auction and I look over at their research and they have a Google Earth picture and a Zillow valuation. And I look at them going, you gotta be kidding me. You need to go see the house?
But you have to wear out some shoe leather, as we say.
Yeah, they feel fully armed. They really do. They feel fully confident. I used to go to HUD auctions in the 90s, and I used to physically go into every property because it was my money. Like you said, I had everything at stake. So I wasn't going to buy a house without going inside it. And one of them was at a cul-de-sac, and I noticed it was fenced off with a chain link fence that shouldn't have been there. It was just circling the house. So I managed to get over the fence and into the house, and it was burnt completely. Half of it was gone, but you couldn't tell it from the cul-de-sac. I happened to be sitting next to a guy who was bidding on that property, and I opened my book and I showed him I had written burnt all the way across it, and he had not gotten out of his car to go see the house, and he won the bid for $60,000, which means, and he didn't notice that it was listed on the HUD list for 11 for the last 2 months.
He bought the lot.
he believed in his process is what it amounted to. And that's kind of what's going on now. One of the things that's interesting, and this came about in California more than it did in Texas, and it goes to the difference in the marketplace. The definition of market value, it contains in there, you know, buyer and seller looking out for their own best interest, being fully informed. But at the end of it, it says, there's basically the transaction is without undue stimulus. And we always think of that as transactional stimulus. But in 2004, 5, and 6, we had systemic stimulus. And the appraiser was really, that, you know, what you're talking about when you hinted at the paying attention to the market dynamics and where the market was going. In California, you know, we're looking at houses that cost $100,000 to build, let's say, and they were going for $400,000. And there was, it just because it had six comps that were $400,000, that was why it was worth that. But we didn't look at, say, why is it possible? It was the financing that allowed that number to emerge. And I think the appraisal world has gotten a fair amount of heat for coming in at numbers where really the process was that's, hey, you've got all these comps, that's the number.
Well, you're actually touching on a very, very important topic that I think is going to get increasing attention as the body of knowledge emerges. We've got some stuff in some of our courses today that addresses this very issue. There is a difference between what people will pay on a transactional basis and what the fundamental value of a property is worth based on market fundamentals.
And what's interesting about that is the appraisal, the actual document of an appraisal always has those elements, right? The cap rate, basically, you're talking about, you know, like an evaluation of cost basis and also the income potential of it. And really for residential, that's almost not even paid attention to anymore, but what you're saying is it probably should be.
Well, appraisals are locked in, appraisers and appraisals are locked in to what we call a point-in-time valuation. And what that means is that this is the value of the property as of a specific date in time. And the way that you get there is you look at what people are willing to pay, the prices that they'll pay. So at the top of the market in 2008, what people were willing to pay was one thing, and that got reported correctly. But that wasn't necessarily what the value or the intrinsic worth of those properties was based upon fundamental supply and demand, things like population growth, things like buying power for shopping centers or job growth for offices. That's a different kind of evaluation. And that's an important distinction in my mind, something that we've got to try to work on with regulators and lenders and all the stakeholders, because those are two different things.
That'd be tough, because you can have a willing buyer and seller come to a very unrealistic price.
Well,
for a lender.
Sure. And back in 2008, when we were at the top of the market, what we know now from hindsight is that, yes, a buyer and seller willingly agreed on a price that was not sustainable by fundamental factors taking place in the economy.
Right. There's a few things that kind of in play right now. There's a number of designations for appraisers. There's an appraisal trainee, a licensed real property appraiser, certified residential, and there's a discussion about raising thresholds for these, and I wanted to make sure they were the same type of discussion. Right now, there's a, and I don't understand this part of it. A licensed real estate property appraiser can accomplish an appraisal on a 1-4 unit for $1 million valuation that's non-complicated. What does that mean?
Well, that's a great question. Obviously, that's a gray area where there is significant disagreement.
Okay. Now, is that the evaluation that they're attempting to bump up?
Well, some want to have what's called the de minimis raised for appraisal thresholds. It's $250,000. So leave out Fannie and Freddie, which are obviously very big players. For non-Fannie and Freddie sold loans, that would mean that you would not have to get an appraisal on a property where the loan amount was less than $250,000.
I didn't
want to raise that to $500,000.
To where you don't need an appraisal at all. Wow.
And of course, after everything we've been through in 2008, the last thing we probably want to do here is abandon sound underwriting practices again.
Is that due to the releasing of, is it called CU, collateral underwriting?
No, I don't think so. Fannie and Freddie require appraisals on all their stuff.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter what the de minimis is.
Okay.
The de minimis would only apply to other types of loans that are not sold to Fannie and Freddie.
How is the collateral underwriting affected the appraisal world at all? And that's been pretty recent, right?
Yes. Fannie Mae released and started to put into use a product called Collateral Underwriter earlier in the year. And what that does is it uses a very sophisticated computerized system that scans all the data out of millions of residential appraisals. And then it looks for inconsistencies in the data. It looks for red flags, where things are not necessarily explained, where adjustments maybe are not fully explained. It looks for other comparables in the area that maybe weren't used in an appraisal. It just tries to identify inconsistencies in an appraisal report. And the goal of that is to try to alert the lender that maybe they ought to ask a question or two about that, why that exists. It does not mean that the appraisal is bad or there's a flaw. It just tries to identify areas where a lender might want to ask a couple of questions. Now, of course, how it's getting used
exactly
is different from the intent. But to the extent that it asks appraisers to explain what they've done and support their analysis, that's not a bad thing. We just want to make sure that it's not abused.
Lance, we've run out of time. We've been with Mr. Lance Coyle, the president of the Appraisal Institute. Lance, thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Elite Auctions, iMortgage, In-A-Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, IRA Services Trust Company, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South RIA, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, New Western Acquisition, North California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Pilot Limousine, Orange County Phoebe, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southern California Chapter of the Appraisal Institute, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, Tri-Counties Association of Realtors, UDirect IRA Services, Westin South Coast Plaza. To find out more about the event, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show.
For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.